Tangible Music Lab, and he's also an expert in interaction and tangible interaction and design. And he's presenting us some of the work from the Tangible Lab. And I let him go and launching the thing, and I will do the technique for you.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Well, thanks for the invitation to come. Je parle un peu du français, mais ça suffit pas pour faire une présentation entière. So I will talk in English today. So, as mentioned, my name is Martin Kaltenbrunner. I'm director of the Tangible Music Lab at the University of Arts in Linz. We are a small research group where we dedicate ourselves to the design of novel musical instruments. Myself, I have a background in human-computer interaction. I have a technical background, and I came to the topic of digital illusory throughout my life. And today I won't talk so much about a special project, maybe about 1 year since here's the project that brought me to the topic of digital illusory and eventually post-digital illusory, but I want to share some of my thoughts today with you. So what's next? What's coming after acoustic, electronic, digital, and potentially post-digital musical instruments? So my start was like 20 years ago when I worked in Barcelona at the Pompeu Fabra University in a place called Music Technology Group. And there, basically, we called ourselves digital luthiers at that time because we wanted to create novel musical instruments and solve the problem of interaction design. So the instrument we created, maybe next, was the Rec Table. Who heard about the instrument before? Yeah, it has been around already like more than 20 years now, catching some dust already. But for me, this was the entry point to musical instrument design. And as I mentioned, so we wanted to create, next slide please, a musical instrument that allows easier access to the interface. Because nowadays, when you learn a novel instrument, you wouldn't spend like a decade for studying the instrument like you would do with a violin. People have very high expectations that they quickly dive into the instrument, that they quickly learn all the details around it and quickly have like a reward around it. So that may be a nice picture, but at the same time, you don't want to be the toy. Yeah, so it's always a problem to have the kind of tension between, okay, how can we make an easy, accessible, intuitive musical instrument that at the same time is a musical instrument that allows the player to express themselves. So there's a really huge tension, so how can you do that quickly? Next slide, please. So what we came up with at the time was a little recipe, and that maybe also shows already a small path from electronic to the digital and eventually to post-digital. So the recipe of the Rectable then was we took the idea of the modular synthesizer and other very common elements of a contemporary electronic instrument like a sequencer or a sampler, for example, and we took some metaphors that have been developed throughout the development of digital instruments, such as, for example, visual programming languages that actually are more or less the virtualization of what a modular synthesizer is. So they have this kind of flow control languages like Max, MSP, and Dupuy-Adapter, for example, which some of you may know. So and then, maybe we'll keep the early one. So and then actually we took the path further and tried to get back into the physical. So we tried to embody what the virtual building blocks do on the screen and try to get back into the physical domain and using this kind of building block metaphor. So what you see here is actually those cubes and simple objects that are the core elements of the Rectable, and they're actually nothing special. So they're acrylic objects which have simple symbols on top of them and other symbols on the bottom, which we use with a computer vision system to detect them on the table. So by themselves, they're kind of meaningless, simple plastic cubes. Next, please. So, but once you put it on the actual table environment, they become to life. So it's like if you would have tokens from a checkers game or a backgammon game, for example, which are lifeless outside the context of the board. But once you put them onto the board, or onto the table in this case, you give them a life and a meaning. So in this case, what those objects do, they are kind of, let's say, a tangible programming language for sound. So more or less the way you would do it with pure data on the screen, you can do it with those simple objects on a table surface. So what you see here basically is a simple patching setup where you see different branches of objects. Some of them are sound generators, like an oscillator or a sample player. Some of them are filters and sound effects. And some of them are control objects, like an LFO, for example, or a sequencer. So you, as I mentioned before, you would know most of those elements already from previous musical instruments and synthesizers and devices and applications. But what we did, we put them into a very simple, tangible interaction paradigm to allow different ways of musical creation. So what you see here is more or less a projection of what we do usually when we play the instrument. Normally when you play a digital music instrument, you would see people performing on a laptop or on a device, and it's very hard to follow what they do. But our instrument more or less also has a very strong visual component. So it's what we do usually is projecting the happenings of the table back to the screen surface. Another feature of the table is that it's actually a round table, which is a quite nice metaphor, and which is also something that is enabled when it becomes physical and tangible again. So it's not a resource like a mouse on the computer or the screen which you share, which you cannot really share with another person, but on this round table you have like a place where you have a cooperation and discussion and musical dialogue enabled. So usually when we play, we do that in times. Maybe we can switch quickly to the video I gave you on YouTube. So it may also be a bit blackish in background, but you should be able to see things. Yeah, maybe just start it. So that's actually one of the video of an Italian DJ who created a simple trance style performance with the rec table. And what you see is basically those performances always start with an empty table. And he is arranging a few objects. So the background should be blue, so it's a bit black blue now. So he's arranging the objects on the table, and all of those objects, they don't make sound yet because they are filters and sound effects, so they need a sound source to start with. So he's now having it on the filter on the right, the delay on the top, on the bottom, and another delay here. And now he adds a sound source, which is a simple square wave oscillator. And by changing the amplitude and the finger gesture, and also rotating the object, you can change the frequency in this case. And the frequency is pitched to a certain tonality, which is defined by the star-shaped object on the bottom. So it's basically discretized to that. So he will soon add another object, which is a sample player, to the second branch he prepared. Attention. And then he starts like doing the typical filter gestures, opening the filter gates, changing filter frequency by rotating that object. So what you see here, just to summarize, we have a quick idea of how the instrument works. So we embody digital functionality into digital objects. So it's really a different way of thinking. So while we have the very simple plastic bug in the beginning, which is again meaningless as I mentioned, as soon as you put it in the context of the table, you would say, that's the oscillator, that's the filter, that's the delay effect and so on. And by manipulating that object that represents the filter, the delay, the oscillator, you manipulate actually all the features this object has. So that's a very simple idea of tangible interaction design applies to music instruments. So we can continue with the slides now. So we eventually also tried to create the product around it, which was actually quite a new learning for us too, because in the beginning we had a research prototype. We had some artistic cooperations with artists like Björk, for example. And then we also tried to make an instrument which gave us a lot of learning again for instrument design. It's not only the concept, it's not only the musical part, it's also, for example, the size of the bag, if it fits in the airport scanner and things like this. So there's a lot of learning also to be taken when you make an instrument from a research prototype into a product. It's like really a completely different journey. But let's move on with our topic of today. So to see a bit in the slides. So since we talk about digital lucery and post-digital lucery, let me give a quick excursion to the digital transformation we're living through, and which started, next slide please, like in the early 70s already with the arrival of the personal computer. And here we see the Xerox Star computer, which was more or less the godfather device for the today's desktop metaphor computer at Xerox. The LNK developed this idea of the desktop Windows icons, menus, pointers, which are very much more what we have today, still in our devices. So what happened at that time then? So suddenly we started to transform many of our cultural techniques from traditional techniques, like typesetting, for example, into digital techniques. So with the arrival of the Macintosh computer and also the laser printer, suddenly we could do things we could do before only manually with classic techniques. We did it on the computer as a general device. And of course, we all, many of us, live through it. Others take it for granted that it's a digital device already. But most of our cultural techniques or productive techniques are more and more digitized. Next, please. So also, for example, in the private media consumption, media production, communication, and so on, which was all like different devices before, it's now converging to single devices like our tablet, mobile phone, which is a very good thing, of course. It's powerful, cheaper, you can do a lot of stuff with it. But, of course, we also reduce ourselves to a human being that is basically communicating with all their things every day, just with the index finger on a tablet or with a mouse, which is basically only an extension of an index finger. So we have this tension now that on the one hand we have these really powerful devices and environments which allow us to do very productive things, but at the same time we reduce ourselves to kind of really reduced human beings that don't use their full bodily and cognitive abilities when we are interacting with machines. So let's do another quick evolution of the lucery, because that's our topic of today, and see how that applies in the, how that went with the digitalization. So lucery started already quite some while ago. So this bone flute was dated like 50,000 years ago, Neolithic times, and since that time, we also make instruments like converting the bow, this is a green bow, into a music instrument, and so on and so on. So of course, all those principles of acoustic music instrument creation have been more perfectionized. No? So throughout times and up to the Baroque times and like 19th century, so what we did is we kind of really tried to exhaust and squeeze everything out of the design space of what we can do with music instruments. So those are really, let's say, the history of 50,000 years of human culture embodied into really nice music instruments. So what can we do there? So of course, musical instruments in the acoustic side, they are limited in the design space. So you cannot do everything. So if you want to make a timbrical change, you may change the metrality. If you want to make a pitch change, you have to change the size, right? So it's very hard to make a tiny, tiny violin that has a very low pitch, which is physically not really possible. So this also brought us, like in the late 19th and early 20th century, to kind of, let's say, a crisis that we would like to make new sounds with those musical instruments, and we couldn't make them. So this is Ruggiero Solos in Tonaro Mori, like early 20th century futurist, who created those instruments to create the compositions like the noises of the sea. But of course, again, this marks really like an end of the mechanical, physical sound production possibilities of that time. Of course, we have been lucky that at that time also electricity and electronics came up, and suddenly we could create sounds with electronic circuitry. And actually, that is already like more than 150 years ago. So this device, you know, of course, is the theremin. It's actually one of the few established electronic instruments that is still around since 100 years. How many can you name of those instruments that are really part of our cultural canon nowadays? Yeah, so there's not many. So there has been thousands of devices and instruments built since. Like the next slide, so for example, in France you have the Martinon, in Germany you have the Platonium, in the US there was the Telamonium. So it was really an explosion of inventors and makers, which maybe similar like today, were inspired by the technical possibilities of creating electronic musical instruments. So that of course changed then in the 60s when those, let's say, very isolated inventions that were only accessible to a few persons became more popular with devices like Moog and Buchla synthesizers that also allowed like ordinary people who are not having access to a like, studio in a telecommunication company, right, to use those synthesizers. And of course they changed the music as well. So suddenly in the 60s, 70s, synthesizers became also part of our musical practice. And this of course also took the path, as we have seen before, from the 70s to the digital domain. So there were early experiments with Max Matthews using mainframe computers to make digital music, and the Fairlight CMI was a very popular digital sound creation system. But then from the 1990s with the Next computer and also the invention of MaxMSP, you suddenly could do real-time music on a digital device as well. So, and that's where we are today. So we have people making music with computers. And the question is this the end? Is this now the end of evolution? Is this what is happening? And actually we have seen quite a digital practice in the last presentation as well. But also connected to the first presentation, with musical instrument design, actually it's not similar what happened with print design, for example. So print design, maybe some enthusiasts are doing still lead letter print design or other kind of traditional techniques of printmaking. So they would use the digital tools. But with instruments and music, actually digitalization does not mean that whatever was there before is disappearing. That's very special. So there are other things like handwriting, for example, who is still very survival, the stronger survival in the digital age. But if you see what happened to the digital music is that we still have acoustic instruments and they don't want to be disappearing, right? Because there's a lot of culture around it, there's a lot of composition around it, there's people studying them, and so they are here to stay, and that's good, like I would say. You also have electronic music instruments which are here to stay. So they have been around since 150 years. So Eurorack, for example, is more popular than ever, right? So there's a lot of culture and industry around electronic music as a classical medium. Of course, it's getting a bit hybrid, so it's becoming a bit digital as well. But then we have also the digital musical instruments, which primarily are the laptops, but also apps and other digital platforms are around. And the question is the digital really the one which will take the path for the future? No? Is it the one, like we've seen before, is it the virtualization which is the path? Do we do everything on screens? Are we doing everything in VR? And I would say maybe not. So that's why I would like to conclude with some reflections on what I think post-digital industry could be. So first of all, post-digital has been discussed since 20 years already, and it started a bit with the disenchantment of the digital. So people were disappointed with the promises of the digital. They say, okay, before everything was promised to be clean and nice and beautiful, and suddenly they were disenchanted and found out, okay, there's glitch also in the digital. It's not so clean as we expected. So this was like a transitional time where people were thinking post-digital is basically the rejection or the disenchantment of the digital. But actually post-digital in our sense means that we are now arrived in a digital age, and that we have to look back, what did we win and what did we lose on the way? And especially musical instrument design, I think we could reflect on a few things. So what I would say, what a post-digital instrument should be, it should be a physical musical object. So if we keep on virtualization, then of course it's digital and it's a nice interesting practice, but it's an area that is quite well defined. So I think a post-digital musical instrument should become physical again, taking the physicality again of a traditional musical instrument, but of course embracing carrying technologies and embodying them into the physical presence of the instrument. So a post-digital instrument should be a musical object that you take off the shelf, and even without a PA, you can play it, just like you would do with a guitar. And it should not be a controller, because of course controllers are there as well, and they would borrow many of the design ideas of traditional musical instruments, for example the keyboard, or they would borrow design ideas from electronic instruments like the knobs and the faders, or they would have like freely designable digital control elements. But still, they are not instruments, they are remote controls to the digital computer, and you're not focusing on them when you're playing them, you would be focusing on the digital device. Another thing which I find quite interesting, we should also reflect again on the instrument corpus. We have so interesting and nice digital production technologies nowadays, which are around everywhere. We have fab labs running around. And next, please. We still have people just making pure boxes and enclosures for their circuits, right? So we could really go back and see, why don't we think more of a post-digital musical instrument corpus? While we of course don't need it anymore physically to create the sound, but we may need it for others, for aesthetical and also for practical reasons of interacting with the data sound. So I would also say that we should argue to have less virtualization, so we don't need so many screens, so things can be communicated in other ways than only visually. So we're talking in the end about the musical instrument, right? So the primary channel of communication is the sound, and then of course there can be secondary communication channels like visual cues, but we also have haptics, for example, and other cues that are equally important. For example, in a traditional musical instrument, you would feel the vibrations as well. One thing which I also would say that this should become less is the idea of parametric control. So when you have an electronic musical instrument, basically you have this kind of circuitry in the inside, and the people would think most of the time, okay, it has like a certain number of parameters I want to control, while I just one-to-one expose them to the instrument players, and they can have knobs and faders and buttons to interact with them. So there can be, of course, as we know from musical instrument design, more complex mappings and interactions with the musical instruments. So this is one I put for my students, is because there's less pedals. It's not because I don't like pedals, but the practice of pedals is that if you cannot manage to put something into a musical instrument, then you would put it externally into a pedal, right? So if you need a certain feature in your instrument, why don't you put it inside in the first place and try to make it controllable in the instrument already, rather than adding a pedal for that effect, right? Well, this is one of my topics, of course, so it connects again quite well to the idea of the physical embodiment of instruments. But of course, this can get further. It doesn't need to be just like blocks and packs and simple devices and so on. It can be something like, metaphorically speaking, like clay, which allows you to physically shape the sound that it represents. So really have like more the physical bodily capabilities of the human embraced. Another thing which I find quite interesting, so that's a speaker design by a Hungarian artist or a duo called Igitek. So they make textile speakers. So another big question is the materiality. So in this digital production era, we are now, there's a lot of plywood, there's a lot of acrylic, there's a lot of electronics, right? So there's no reason why we cannot use biomaterials, why we cannot use textiles and other materialities. We had an artist at the lab recently who did fluidics, making logics with fluid connections. So we can, and we have the technology nowadays, we can look over the border of traditional materialities already. So the human center should show that Leonardo figure where we try again to have this more human-centered design and not the post-human or trans-human design. So transhumanism is the idea where we would adapt as a human being to the technological environment. We become basically cyborgs. We would obey to the technical development. But I think we can think it in both sides as well. Why don't we have technology also serve the cognitive and bodily capabilities of a human being equally, right? So we don't always need to obey the technical development. This is still a thinking we had in the 19th century, no? When we basically had machines for industrial productions and people needed to serve them to produce goods. So it could be the other way around. Another thing I already mentioned is multisensory. So we are more than our eyes and ears. So we're having a full human body again. And I mentioned haptics already. But it also could be really taste and smell and other senses. The whole body is a sensing being. So I think that shouldn't be forgotten, especially in the contrast to that one fingered creature I showed in the beginning. I think there's a big space between the one fingered creature and that homunculus. Another thing which is really crucial, I think, digital lucidary or digital interfaces, they really suppress expressive potential of players. People hardly do that with a laptop, right? So it's hard to really do that. Of course, you can do it and you can make a point while you do it, but you would not transmit that expressive bandwidth while you do it to the instrument. It just select an array of buttons. But while you do this with a guitar, of course, you can transmit that expressive potential. Another thing which is maybe important, so the next two slides and the last slides are actually quite important in terms of the times of the AI we're living in. Of course, AI is a very useful tool, and we will use it for a lot of things, also in computer music and creativity and so on, as long as we use it as a tool. But when we're talking about the musical instrument, then still, there's a human in the loop. We need this interactive agency of the human. They need to be the ones expressing themselves. It's an AI-based tool, well, it's fine, but it may be just like the AI playing, or it's a toy that is just suggesting nice behaviors for us, but it's not letting us play. So with a post-digital instrument, you should be able to play wrong as well. And that's, of course, the same thing with the automatic part. And my last reflection on it, well, there has been discussion, which I mentioned already in the beginning, of a kind of post-digital aesthetics, which was much related to glitch and so on. But I don't think that the post-digital instrument should really have an influence on the music you make. So it should keep it open. For example, this is an Austrian band called Electro Buzzi. So they play techno with traditional bands, equipment like guitars and drums. So post-digital instruments, they should be open to any style. And if you look just at the saxophone, the saxophone was invented for the traditional orchestra, but it became popular with jazz. So it's not bound to the instrument, what kind of music you want to make with it. Well, that said, so at our lab, we also run a master program on post-digital lucidary since 4 years. So that's where we try to reflect all those ideas in building new instruments. Actually, we just produced our first graduates, two of them, so it's still very new. And there we try to mix all these ideas in the idea of design and technology, music and performance, and art and media theory to be in all that recipe included. And we also cooperate in that sense with the Bruckner University in Linz, which is the music university in our town, to have those musical aspects covered. Thanks a lot for your attention.
Thank you very much, Martin. Do we have some questions in the audience? I do have a question, because I'm very interested with TNL, in what extent you mixed experiences from the design disciplines with the technique of play, and what is the process? You start with conceiving new instruments, or you start by conceiving new play techniques and instruments techniques, and then adapt to interfaces?
Actually, we have a kind of didactical red line through the master program. So in the first semester, our students come with a lot of ideas, but most of them still, they're coming from different backgrounds. Some of them are musicians, others are engineers, right? So it's difficult to put them into one bag. But they come with a lot of ideas, but maybe with lacking skills. So what we do in the first semester is we make a fictional design exercise. So the first thing, because usually when people learn about technology, they would build around the technology. They would play a sensor, for example, and not play an instrument. So what we ask them in the first semester, please make an instrument and talk about how does it look like, what's the body of it, what's the physical appearance of it. how should it sound like? So make a composition, a kind of a mock-up composition, how you think it will sound in the future, and how should it behave? So when you have another sound in the object, so how are you happy having this dialogue with the object? So that's the first semester exercise. And in the last semester, we have another exercise, which is very important, is then, for example, then people spend time on building and implementing the actual instrument, and there's a lot of programming and electronics involved, and then they forgot many of the things we taught them before, and then they focus on the tech. But what we do later is basically we say, okay, now you finish it, and now you give it to your neighbor. So because when people build the instruments, they somehow get lost into technical details they find interesting, and they lose the focus on the instrumental part. And in my opinion, it only becomes an instrument when somebody else is capable of playing it. And actually it also imposes some quality insurance to the students that they have to make a stable instrument so it doesn't fall apart, right? So what we do in this phase, so then have to play and compose for instrument, because that also needs time, but also another person needs to do that. And I think this another person is one of the most crucial steps in the design of the instrument.
Thank you very much. I'm afraid we are running short in time, so I propose to have a round table discussion more after. And thank you very much for your presentation.